Now, when you consider that Queensland's produced a Governor-General, a Prime Minister, a Treasurer, Pauline Hanson and the founder of Palmer United, it's clear that this weekend's state election matters very much to the rest of the country. It mightn't have the repercussions of the Greek election we've just been discussing, but it's a red alert. Premier Campbell Newman has sought to downplay his combative image, but nevertheless has chosen a banner called Strong Choices. But downplaying his image was going to be a big ask following his war on bikies, on doctors, the judiciary, and the sacking of thousands of public servants, not to mention the controversial sell-off of state assets described as long-term leasing of state assets, its advocacy of mining development over the interest of local communities and environmental laws. Last week, my old colleague Shock Jock Alan Jones weighed in, carting his program to Brisbane to criticise what he calls Newman's alleged lies and the Liberal National Party's alleged prostitution. Joining me now is someone who's not quite at the same point on the political spectrum as Alan. It's Dr. Mark Banish, sociologist, writer, consultant. He's a fellow at the Centre for Policy Development and is currently writing a book called Everything You Need to Know About Queensland, but Were Afraid to Ask. Well, as you and I sit here on a Wednesday night at 10:22, what's the latest predictions look like?
The latest prediction for Saturday is now looking like Mr. Newman will be looking elsewhere for a job. Regtel poll tonight, Channel 7, they've been commissioning polls in his seat of Ashgrove, which is where my dad lives, so it's an area I know really well. And he's at 46% and Labor's Kay Jones is at 54%.
I'm as surprised he's at 46. It's not a bad performance.
No, he's doing pretty well. Last time, round about the same time before the election, I think it was almost reversed, he was at 53.7 and she was at about 46.3. So the LNP have been telling us, don't worry, don't you worry about that. Campbell will be back with us. I'm not so sure now.
Whenever we see a swing in state politics, the swing is usually tougher on celebrity or high-profile candidates. This is something I remember Barry Jones observed in the 70s. And so, okay, Campbell Newman's copying it. How big is the swing outside that seat of his?
Well, Campbell Newman isn't copying it as much as a lot of his colleagues are. I mean, again, it depends which polls you read. There's a number of seat-level polls. Galaxy have done some, Regtel have done some. They tend to come up with somewhere between 9 and 13% to the ALP.
Who would have thought it was possible?
Now, Bob Catter.
Really?
Yeah. State election last time, 24th of March 2012. Catter was on the ABC's election coverage. And he said, I've got a message for Campbell Newman. If he thinks that this wave that's just hit Labor is not coming for him in 3 years' time, he might have another thing coming. And I think that Bob Catter might be proved right.
I'm quite fond of Bob. He used to come on the program quite a bit. And
he's
a force
of nature.
Gladdy, yeah. But he seemed to be a spent force politically. But he may, in fact, be influential this time round.
Maybe. I don't think he will be, but the interesting thing is that a lot of the people who voted for him in regional Queensland seem to have switched their allegiance to the ALP.
Okay. Prospect of a hung parliament?
I think at the moment you've got a number of plausible scenarios. Part of the problem, and you need an Anthony Green to explain this comprehensively, is that with optional preferential voting, it becomes very, very difficult to say, what is the two-party preferred? The concept doesn't really exist because people exhaust their preferences. So I think that it would be a brave call for anyone at this point to predict the outcome. But the scenarios are probably in order of probability: hung parliament, LNP without Newman, Labor government, LNP with Newman.
Now, as you know, Australia's got a rabbit-proof fence, and I believe that Campbell Newman rapidly erected an Abbott-proof fence for this election. He hasn't been seen up there, young Tony.
Well, he went to the funeral of a very, very tragic incident where eight kids were killed in Cairns. So he was there. So it's not strictly true to say that he was not seen in Queensland. He was. But that was a very much non-political event, although it was attended by both Campbell Newman and Anastasia Palaszczuk. But aside from that, He's been absent, but perhaps his spectre looms fairly large. Queensland and now, you know, perhaps Duke Philip or Duke Sir Philip might get a little part of it to call his own.
In a recent article, you described some of the recent absurdities in Queensland, like the bikies having to wear pink jumpsuits in Brisbane, the infringements on the right of free speech, and its war on the judiciary as harking back to an authoritarian Labor Party, one distrustful of independent social institutions and the separation of powers. Justify that outrageous statement.
about the Labor Party or about the bikies and the pink jumpsuits?
No, I accept all that.
Okay. Have you ever read Vance Palmer?
Of course.
Yeah, so I'm rereading Golconda at the moment. And if you go back to the foundations of the Labor Party in Queensland, and, you know, there's some dispute as to whether it was founded in Balmain or in Queensland, but at Winton. But, yeah, it was a tough game. It was they were tough men. There were early feminists who were largely marginalised by Labor in politics in the 1890s and 1900s. And it was a game for shearers. It was a game for mine workers. And, you know, very often physical force came into play in that early period. So there's a lot of confrontation.
I suddenly remember the fascinating fact that Queensland's the only part of Australia which actually elected a communist.
Fred Patterson.
Yep. And he then was laid low by a blow from a cop, wasn't he?
Yep, just outside Trades Hall in 1948. So a truncheon to the head.
So we've got to remember that historically Queensland has never simply been ratbag right. It's had all sorts of dynamics, depending on which Queensland you're looking at.
It's been ratbag left too. So the world's first Labor government in 1899 lasted 7 days. Ross Fitzgerald wrote a book about that. Labor was elected to power in 1915. Brisbane had the first general strike anywhere in the world in 1912. There's an American guy that ran the tram company called Boss. I'm not sure what his last name was. I could look it up. And he wouldn't let them wear their union badges. And they said, nope, we're going to wear our union badges. And everyone came out. The first general strike citywide, anywhere in the world, Brisbane, 1912. The early Labor governments under T.J. Ryan and Red Ted Theodore set up things like state bottle shops. It's probably a very good idea. They might open later than 10 p.m. That would be nice for New South Wales. State butcher's shops, state mines, which got Red Ted into trouble when he became federal treasurer a few decades down the track during the Depression. And, you know, they abolished the Legislative Council.
So we're looking at a state which has been involved in all sorts of political experiment.
And political extremes, yeah.
Now, the current experiment has been a political failure. Okay, Bob Katter saw it coming. Hardly anyone else did. You know, his Labor down to this minuscule rump in the greatest political wipeout that I can recall in a long life. Which, is it one big bad decision, or is Newman in trouble because of incremental decisions?
I think it's one big bad decision. I think the big bad decision was to sack all the public servants so early, and then the other big bad decision, so maybe it's not one, it's two, maybe there's one every year. Last year was all about, you know, wars on everyone. Bikies, but also lawyers and doctors. The big bad decision of this election campaign is to go into it saying, let's sell the assets. I mean, it may be disguised as a lease. Campbell Newman and some of his ministers have been fond of saying, you know, if you own a rental property and you lease it out to a tenant, it's still yours, but that's a bit different from a 99-year commercial lease, and the key difference is that you get no income from it. You know, if I have a rental property, I get some income. If I lease the energy assets in the port, that's it.
You sound like an Australian version of Yiannis Varoufakis. It's the sort of stuff that he'd be saying and was saying, of course.
I've had something to do with the political economy department at the University of Sydney, so maybe I picked something up there. Yeah.
Now, what about the Labor side? Have they been campaigning well, or just coasting on the? the ineptitudes of Newman?
Yeah, it's a really good question. I think in 2012, and I'm told by people who remember my Facebook posts from then, so they must be very strange people, or very, very politically interested people, that I was having a chat probably about 3 or 4 months after the state election in 2012 and saying, it'd be really, really good if Labor got up to 20 MPs. Okay, so this is, 3 years ago. For a while, Newman hasn't led in the polls for some time, but the feeling, I guess, was that, it was that sort of what they do in the US when they say, would you vote for a generic Democrat? Okay, so people will say, oh, yeah, I like the Democrats. And then you get the actually existing Democrat against the Republican congressman you've got, and you think, wait a sec, I'd rather stick with him or her. So I think if you'd asked people, observers, last year, they might have been inclined to say Labor would be better off not running a campaign. You know, the ultimate small target. As soon as they actually have to put forward a policy platform, as soon as they have to respond to debate, respond to criticism, they'll lose some skin. What's interesting is that it hasn't quite worked out like that. You know, I think they've run a very clever campaign designed to minimise their weaknesses, but in a way that's perhaps all they can do. You know, the big question really is, do Queenslanders despise Newman and the LNP government more than they despise Labor and the Anna Bligh government at its end?
Yes, well, I'm wondering whether after the rise and fall of Anna Bligh, who I must confess is a good friend of mine, is Queensland ready to contemplate the possibility of another woman premier?
I guess George Christensen isn't. The National Party MP who put a repulsive cartoon up on his Facebook page yesterday, and Larissa Waters, the Green Senator, rightly condemned the degree of sexism that might still be present in some elements of the LNP, not all. Mm. I don't know that it's been an issue. I mean, I think whether or not Newman, with all this stuff about strong choices, strong plans, a strong team, I don't know what a strong choice is. I mean, that seems to me to be semantically meaningless, or a strong plan, but, he is playing on that notion that Queenslanders like very strong politicians. Anna Bligh also, and I used to think it was to her detriment. I mean, she felt that she had to appear with a hard hat all the time. I covered the 2009 state election for Crikey, which is a thing on the internet that your listeners may have heard of. And I was really disappointed during that campaign that Anna came across so much better in a forum such as this, in a radio interview, than in the very scripted grabs on TV with the hard hat or looking strong. I think what Anastasia Palaszczuk has done is that she's presenting a contrast. You know, she's one of her themes is that she listens to people, and she genuinely does. I mean, I know for an absolute fact, if you talk to anyone, a lot of the policy ideas have not been plucked out of the air or plucked out of, some bag of political staff or tricks. The degree to which she and her very, very small band of Labor MPs have gone around and talked to teachers, talked to nurses, talked to coppers, talked to ambos and all the rest of it to come up with, almost one key symbolic thing they want is quite remarkable. She's a great listener, and she's presenting a contrast with Newman in the sense that, she won't take a backward step, but she's not this sort of confrontational person who is just trying to say, look, being strong is about going the biff and beating up on people you don't like.
Going back to the Abbott-proof fence, and I acknowledge that there was one moment when he got through it, but a very special moment and terrible circumstances. To what extent is the federal government's problems affecting the perceptions in Queensland?
I would have thought that, in a sense, Newman pioneered the Abbott model. So, with your previous guest, who's been somebody who's been a dedicated fighter against sort of a shambolic austerity regime, the Senate, bizarrely, probably has saved us from the impact of the austerity regime that the federal coalition would like to see. But in a sense, Campbell Newman wrote the script for Tony Abbott. Campbell Newman had a commission of audit. Peter Costello, a guy from Melbourne, was the chair of that. Campbell Newman is very similar to Tony Abbott in the sense
and equally that... pugnacious.
Yeah, equally ways, pugnacious. Yeah. And this notion that one of the things Queenslanders, I think, have really disliked, and this goes back to what the Labor Party have tried to present as a point of contrast, is that the idea that whenever they see Newman or one of his ministers on TV, up until recently when they instituted Operation Boring, they haven't been talking about what they're doing for Queenslanders. They've been saying, oh, you know, the bloody commies and bikies and unionists and, you know, southerners and all the rest of it. And, you know, some people describe some of Tony Abbott's actions as trolling. I don't know if it's the same for Campbell Newman, but it just seems as if the only thing that unifies the LNP is its enemies. You know, and it's a disunited party. It's you know, Gough Whitlam talked about a ramshackle coalition, you know, opposing Napoleon in wasn't Waterloo, was it? It was the other one, the other battle. And you know, this is, the LNP has existed since 2008. But, you know, at their policy launch, they had Jeff Seeney, the Deputy Premier, described by one of his own colleagues, parliamentary colleagues, as the most hated man in the bush, without his Akubra. And standing right behind him was one of their candidates with Amisa Kuba, who used to be a Somalian refugee, with a number of her relatives in hijabs. Now, it's a bizarre contrast, and it goes to the difficulty that the LNP always has had in keeping liberal voters in the tent, urban liberal voters in the same tent as the bush, the reactionaries in the bush. Not everyone in the bush is a reactionary, but there are some very hard-right people out there.
I just, look, we were off to Oxford to talk to Nicholas Shakespeare about this extraordinary story about the only enemy attack on Australian soil in the First World War. Of course, we had to put in parenthesis that the Indigenous population might see things differently about enemy attacks. But before we do that, Queensland also gave us PUP. Not a factor?
It's interesting that that Clive has been almost absent from the campaign. It'll be really interesting to see how John Bjelke-Petersen goes in Calide. Pretty bizarre campaign. They're promising an international airport for Maroochydore. They're promising a first farm owner's grant. Maybe not. The significance of PUP is probably only that to the degree that they get some votes, they'll be votes the LNP won't get, and they won't flow back through exhaustion of preferences. So, I think everyone was expecting this to be, you know, Clive said, I'll drop a big bombshell. Where is it? We haven't seen it yet. Maybe it's still coming.
Mark, thanks for your time. Dr. Banish is a sociologist, a consultant, author, and fellow at the Centre for Policy Development, and at any minute he's going to do a Yiannis Varoufakis and toss his hat in the ring and become the treasurer of something or other. This is LNL, and we're off to talk to, as promised, to the splendid Nicholas Shakespeare. Just let me remind you that Nicholas wrote that marvellous biography of Bruce Chatwin, and he also edited the collection of Chatwin's letters Under the Sun, as well as writing quite a few novels. LNL on RN.